Wouldn't you love to get paid for doing what you love to do? If you're ready to move on to what's next, join us for Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson. Our uplifting live talk show on Saturday mornings from 10 to noon will have you circling back, not running in circles, to pull your experience forward in new ways. Advance your career, plus help others with theirs. Join us Saturdays, 10 to noon, right here on 104.1 The Truth, for pragmatic advice and unconventional wisdom. Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson, where your path is created by walking on it. Welcome back to Circles of Change, where your path is created by walking on. It's a real pleasure during this segment of our show to welcome a really outstanding, very well-known woman of the world and woman of both supporting individuals as well as the lovely beasts of the earth. So Ginger Catherine's from the Cloud Foundation, welcome to our show.
Thanks so much for having me.
You bet. Well, let me offer a brief introduction. Ginger is the president of Taurus Productions and the founder and executive director of the Cloud Foundation. She's a firsthand informed, impassioned, and entertaining speaker about her now 16-year journey with wild horses and is considered a world expert on the behavior, history, and evolution in North America. A native of Ohio, growing up on a farm, Ginger attended Bowling Green State University and Florida State and is an Emmy Award-winning TV producer and award-winning author. She's produced and contributed to programs on the Discovery Channel, Animal Planet, National Geographic, the BBC, and PBS. Her documentary films have taken her all over the world, but the Arrowhead Mountains of Montana, home of the wild horse Cloud and his herd of unique Spanish wild horses, holds a special place in her heart. And this is the topic of our conversation today, how Ginger's filming and chronicling the life of the charismatic wild stallion Cloud has actually turned into a revealing story towards advocacy. That advocacy thus has resulted in a very high-profile movement to save the wild horses and burros from extinction at, sadly, the hands of our fellow human beings. So, Ginger, how did it even come about that you took that first trip to go track this horse down?
Well, before Cloud was born, I was asked to do a PBS documentary for the Wild America series by Marty Stauffer. You may remember he's the bearded host of Wild America.
Oh, yeah.
And he called and said would I shoot a film for him about Mustangs, that I loved horses. He knew that I knew a lot about horses. And so I said yes, jumped at the chance. Two things were a little bit troubling, and that is that I was afraid that creating a whole half-hour show about animals that stood around in a field and grazed all day would be a little bit difficult to fill that 22 minutes of time. And what I learned soon after that is they don't stand around in a field and graze all day. All wild horses do when you see them in the wild is run away from you.
Run away, yeah.
So I thought this is going to be really difficult. And bottom line, I knew nothing about what I was trying to do. I tried to do research on the topic, and I realized there wasn't anything that really revealed to us what wild horses are like in North America, their behavior. So I didn't know how to even go about getting the footage
of them. But you had been a long-time equestrian, though, right?
When I was a child, I had a pony when I was five that was a stallion that I never got to touch. In fourth grade, I had a rodeo horse that only ran away with me a couple of times.
Okay.
And in seventh grade, I had a quarter horse. Well, I had one horse at a time.
Okay,
so,
yeah.
And I had not had any horses beyond the time I was in college. So I had gone for, 25 years without having horses of any kind, and as a child had only had them one at a time.
Mm-hmm.
But that was soon to change. Both having horses and learning about their natural behavior was going to change in a big hurry in 1994.
And just to put that in perspective, that time in your career, because this is, so you've got such a wonderful portfolio of experience you've done in filming up until that point in time. Do you remember, was this at some inflection point in your own career that suddenly these doors opened and shifted for you? Do you recall?
Well, I started doing research and writing for Marty Stauffer's Wild America series in 1987, but he never let me film anything. And, girls don't shoot in this Arkansas boy's mind. And in 1993, I was fortunate enough to produce a two-hour special for the Discovery Channel called Spirits of the Rainforest that was shot in eastern Peru. And that particular documentary was chosen as the best documentary of the year by the Emmys, and also Best Music. So after Marty saw that they'd won this, and he knew that I'd shot most of it, that's when he called to ask me if I could shoot for him. So that's kind of the path that led up to the moment of getting to shoot for Wild America, was winning an Emmy for something else. But during the time that led up and through Spirits, that journey, when I was doing the research and writing for Marty's, was really a remarkable one, because a lot of the times the animals that I was doing the research on or editing the shows for or writing would appear.
Isn't that interesting?
Well, I didn't think too much about it at the time, even when a turtle toddled across a main highway in Colorado Springs and I was able to pick it up and rescue it and bring it back to the office and feed it worms and grasshoppers. I was working on the truth about turtles. And when porcupines showed up in my cabin in the mountains, doing everything, including breeding with babies and so forth, when I was doing the prickly porcupine, I didn't think too much about it. And then I saw a fisher, or not a fisher, but a pine marten, the only one I've ever seen in Colorado, near my cabin when I was writing a show called Meet the Marten.
Oh, my gosh.
A beautiful little fur-bearing animal. When I was and there were all these strange, kind of lucky, I thought, ironic experiences that carried through with Spirits of the Rainforest. I was doing research on that particular show and was at a bookstore and had just seen a movie about South America, At Play in the Fields of the Lord, which is a wonderful feature film. And I walked over into the bookstore, pulled a book out of the bookcase, opened it up, and it was The Dress and Habits of the Inca People. And that is exactly the first sequence I was scheduled to shoot when I got to Peru.
So this is four or five times that you're...
Oh, much more than
that. Yes, that yeah, what you put out, it comes to you.
Well, you know, I was told by a dear friend of mine that there's a new science that they're studying called the science of intention.
Absolutely, yes, yes.
And maybe you're more aware of this than I am.
We talk about this on the air, yes.
Do you really?
Yes, uh-huh.
Okay.
So it's perfect.
Well, it was... I mean, when Cloud was born, a year after I started my filming with Marty, and, well, Raven's band kept, Raven is Cloud's black father, and all the horses that I'd seen in the West ran away from me, but in the times I would come to the Pryor Mountains of southern Montana, this one band would appear, even paralleling the car on my first journey up this bumpy four-wheel drive road in their horse range, and it was Raven and his mares. And they taught me what it meant to be a wild horse. They taught me about their behaviors. Now I think that they were inviting me to follow them and create a story, not generically, which is what I planned, about wild horses in North America, but a story that was a personal journey with a group, a family of wild horses.
And how many were in that herd at the time?
There were three mares. There was a pale buckskin mare, a gria mare, and the buckskin mare's daughter, a young Palomino mare. And then there was a yearling black son, Raven's son, that I called Little Raven. And then a tiny foal that was 3 days old when I first met them, who turned out to be Cloud's brother, because a year later, I was filming on the mountain, something entirely different, and they brought Cloud when he was just a few hours old in front of my camera.
Oh, my goodness. Yes. As if the calling was, we need you to tell our story.
I believe so.
Yeah.
I mean, it took me years and years and years to realize this. I never even dreamt of doing a film about Cloud until 1999. He was 4 years old. I went to a meeting with PBS to pitch some story ideas to do a film about. Didn't even pitch the idea of Cloud because I thought, oh, that's a kid's story.
Mm-hmm.
So during the meeting with Mary Jane McKinman, who was a science editor for PBS, she saw a picture of a white colt on the edge of the table underneath some other proposals. And she said, well, what's that one about?
I love it, yes.
Somehow that picture had worked its way out of a stack. And I said, oh, that's just a kid's story about a wild horse I filmed since the day he was born. She absolutely almost leapt out of her chair and went over and called Fred Kaufman, who is the executive producer of Nature, And although National Geographic was interested in the story of Cloud 2, I chose Nature because they also wanted me to do a book about Cloud. And they wanted me to narrate the story. They said it'll make it more personal. So that's the only reason that I became kind of a voice for this horse, to interpret his behavior personally, and it became my journey as well, a journey that continues to this day.
And so what, the total years now it's been you've been connected with Cloud?
Well, Cloud was born May 29th of 1995, so he's going to be 15 years old, and I hope to celebrate his birthday with him, as I have every year since.
Isn't that beautiful? And so this particular herd, how close can you get up with them then?
You can get too close.
Yes.
We were up last week filming, and it took 4 days to find Cloud, and he looked just so beautiful, prettier than I've seen him in many years coming out of winter, because winter is a time that's a rough time of the year. Coming out of a severe Montana winter, horses look pretty lean and can look kind of scrubby. And here's this beautiful, of course, pale Palomino horse that just looks stunning. And he went off to play with a couple of bachelor stallions. He may be going to be 15, but I'll tell you, there's still a lot of play left in that stallion.
Yes.
And he was kind of going over there to, you know, display and show off and, you know, bully him a little bit. And when he came trotting back to his band, instead of trotting directly to the band, he trotted right at my camera. And just before he got to the camera, he just pivoted and went around.
And went around.
It was almost like he was saying, did you get that?
Yeah, let me show it again. did you get my good side here?
Yeah. I hope you kept it in focus that time.
That's right.
You know.
Well,
so.
our listeners should appreciate it. And for those who just turned in, we're speaking with Ginger Catherine, who's founder of the Cloud Foundation. The foundation, though, is dedicated, obviously, to a very somber topic. And that, of course, is really the attempted eradication of these beautiful animals. So how is it you came and realized the necessity to shift now, Ginger, and become an advocate, not just one who is chronicling and learning so richly?
Well, in I suppose, the late 1990s, Claude would have been 4 or 5 years old. I didn't realize at the time that the BLM was managing wild horses to extinction, and in fact, I would have told you that that was not true. So it's only been in the mid-2000s that I came to realize, and I have the belief that that is the goal, is to eradicate wild horses and burros on our public lands. And I had been involved in the creation of an alliance in the late 1990s called the Wild Horse and Burro Freedom Alliance, and we had HSUS and ASPCA and Animal Welfare Institute, a lot of people who were involved in that coalition. But because of personality differences or differences in opinion on a policy, that just didn't seem to be working out. And I thought, I'm just going to create a little foundation that is meant to protect Cloud's herd. Mm-hmm. If we can't protect and preserve Cloud's herd, then we might as well hang it up, because they have become the most famous wild horse herd in the world. And so that was the goal of the Cloud Foundation. But in the last, really since last fall, when the BLM decided to do this massive roundup on the priors, removing a great number of Cloud's offspring, the public got pretty incensed over this. And they got upset enough that they kind of got off their sofas and onto their computers. And with this, you know, the technology we have, you know, we can communicate so instantly, that really in an instant, I found that Cloud had really created a constituency beyond what we had known before.
Wow.
And so now we're in the forefront of leading really a movement, because it's a grassroots movement, to stem the tide, to preserve as many horses as we can before there's none left.
And Ginger, from your own background and upbringing, the idea of, you know, yourself now being in a position of being a voice, again, not just a historical behavior, interesting story, human interest, but now advocacy, are there things that have prepared you for this? Or how do you feel? Is it hand in glove for you on a personal basis?
Well, I could never sell Girl Scout cookies as a kid. And for me to ask for money was abhorrent. I've never been very good in my career asking for budgets that maybe should have been bigger. But I can go out and advocate for these animals. I can say we need your support, not only your support voluntarily, but we need your support of donations to keep us going, because we're really bound and determined that we're going to make a difference. Having said that, my undergraduate degree is in speech communications,
okay,
and my graduate degree is in mass communications. So those have held me in good stead. I'm not going to say I'm a comfortable public speaker, but I'm becoming more so. I always have jitters and go, oh gosh, why am I doing this? I'm scared to talk to these people, but I've become more comfortable talking to groups of various sizes. I actually was the commencement speaker at Bowling Green a couple of years ago at my university. So,
something I bet at that time you never dreamed you'd do the
beam
up there.
No, and it's only because of really my work as a filmmaker, my notoriety as a filmmaker, that I've been chosen, you know, I've been given awards by my university, but then they've always asked me to speak, and well, I can usually work in a little bit of a plug there.
That's right.
For advocacy, for doing something with your life other than earning money.
And I tell you, that was, of course, our introduction was when you came to Tucson for this first Southern Arizona Horse Expo back in January, and it was marvelous to watch you and Michael Blake, of course, author of Dances with Wolves and every bit the Mustang supporter that you are, but the two of you stand in a center arena and just go and have a conversation. And it wasn't until afterwards that I found out from Michael that you two hadn't pre-rehearsed. You hadn't even decided who would say what when,
mm-mm,
that it just happened. And the point of that, of course, is that when you carry that kind of passion and a subject and a commitment, that there's no saying how far and fast you can step.
Yeah, it was wonderful. I was honored to be standing in a dirt arena with Michael Blake, looking at hundreds of people. I mean, the bleachers were packed with people,
yeah,
who were very, very concerned in the Tucson area. I was gratified with their level of knowledge and caring. And of course, Michael was stunning. And yeah, we didn't rehearse anything. We just, you know, we'd kind of look at each other like, take it from here, you know, because my advocacy work has put me in the forefront. I've got more of the stats in my mind and so
sure
forth. And he, of course, has his wonderful stories about growing up and 10 of the horse that, no, 12.
12,
the 12 of the king. His story of getting this horse and his journey, too, is not, and what would you call it, not serendipity.
It just is unfurled out of a course,
yeah,
a variety of things.
Yeah.
Well, Ginger, the Cloud Foundation now, explain to our listeners and how can we help you, your internet address and all those kind of things if people want to continue to learn more.
Well, I would say you can go to our beautiful website that has all kinds of information on it, and then that's thecloudfoundation.org. So make sure you put the law in front of Cloud Foundation. So it's www.thecloudfoundation.org. You can sign up to be on our support list. That doesn't require you to do anything, because you'll automatically get messages from me. Today we sent out all kinds of pictures from our trip last week up into the Priors, and guess what? There's a new little pail full, a male.
Oh, beautiful.
Who is a carbon copy of Cloud that was born about 3 weeks ago. And it's the first time in many years, other than Image, who was removed in that roundup last fall. It's the first birth of a Palomino since Image, and before Image, it had been 12 years before one had been born. So this remarkable little colt is up there now, free with his family, and that's the way we want to keep it. And so we're asking people to really help us. You can help us by getting involved with writing to your congressmen or your senators. You can tell your neighbors. I was taken with what Michael said when people said, what can we do? And Michael said, you can tell a friend.
Mm-hmm. That's
and
right.
you know, if at the very least, that's what you can do, and you can point them to our website, and we have gifts that you can purchase, and that's tax deductible to you, and it's Cloud Story on video, on DVDs, in my books, and those go directly into supporting our efforts to educate the public, educate the media, educate our elected officials as to the beauty of preserving a very special part of our Western history, and animals that so love their freedom and family.
And are such role models for all of us, that's to be sure.
Isn't that true?
It's really true. Ginger, on a personal level, how is it you feel you've changed during this, you know, just even the last couple years of your leading change?
I like to be alone. I value my quiet time with just my dog or my horse riding on a quiet trail. I don't like crowds. I've never been much really of a, you know, people person. And so because I have to be out there because it's something that I guess I was destined to do, I have become more appreciative of other people. Their views, the depth of their emotions. I've come to love people, whereas before I would have told you humans are not some of my favorite animals.
Beautiful. Well, thank you so much for joining us here today, Ginger Catherines from the Cloud Foundation. And again, to support Ginger and others' efforts, you can go to thecloudfoundation.org and become better educated, tell a friend, and just truly delight in these beautiful animals that we have on our planet. Ginger, thanks so much.
The Larson Group, Architects of Change, is a leadership consulting, executive coaching, and career transition firm. We help individuals make the most of their current employment situation or to step forward confidently into a career transition. Contact us at thelarsongroup.com or toll free 1-877-544-2580. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, helping others unleash potential through transformational change. 1-877-544-2580.